Welcome to Business and Stuff, the podcast that I've recently launched. You're actually the third guest, so thank you very much for that. If you can, Curtis, please sort of introduce yourself and your company, and then we'll get on to the story of how you started. And it's really interesting. I think it'd be great to hear that from yourself.
Sure. So my name is Curtis Boyd. I'm the founder of Objection Co. We build technology to identify fake reviews for consumers and business owners. We're technically a SaaS business, software as a service, in the reputation space. I've been in the online reputation industry for almost 8 years now.
And how do you think things have changed recently? Do you think lots of people are sort of using fake reviews and things like that now, or do you think that a lot of the big companies like Google, Amazon, things like that, do you think they're getting more savvy to it? I mean, have things sort of changed in the industry over the last 8 years?
You know, I would say there are more fake reviews now because consumers are using them more, especially during COVID, when less people talk to one another, right? There's less word of mouth referrals. Because people aren't talking to each other more, they're going online to get the confidence that they need to make a purchase. They're checking out reviews and but online reviews have become even more important. So in 2020, Google released a blog that it's like a transparency report where they say they removed 55 million fake reviews. That's 160,000 fake reviews a day. And that's just Google. It's not Yelp. It's not Yell. It's not Facebook or Amazon. It's just Google, 55 million fake reviews in 1 year. So in my opinion, it's just the tip of the iceberg compared to how many are still on there.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, how do you think fake reviews affect the end consumer, both in a sort of a B2C respect, so business to consumer, but also in a sort of a B2B fashion? Or do you think they're very much the same in the way that they affect people?
No, I think fake reviews, like the majority of it, affects the consumer more negatively. It one of the reasons I got into fake review detection was because, you know, I was serving business owners. And before I talk about my story, you know, I realized that while I got deeper and deeper into technology and programming, I realized that the majority of fake reviews didn't impact my customer, which at the time were business owners. They impacted consumers. Because most fake reviews are 5-star reviews. Most fake reviews are inflating businesses in order to synthetically create this sense of false confidence that this business delivers experiences that are really fictional, you know, that never really existed, just to get customers to hand over their credit cards. And I realized I wasn't solving it. So I set on a mission to solve it. And that's what we're doing now, as well as helping consumers make better spending decisions. But it's a fascinating field.
Definitely, yeah. And it's interesting that you are now sort of in the technology field and certainly sort of within this this niche itself. But really your background is completely different, isn't it? And this is where your story sort of plays in. For everybody listening, tell me how you sort of came up with the business and the story that I obviously am aware of with how you came up with the business. So give us a bit of an insight.
Sure. So, you know, my entrepreneur journey started about 9 years ago. I was a nursing assistant in a hospital. And, you know, I was at the bottom of the food chain. I was cleaning patients, feeding them, making sure that they, you know, taking care of the ones who couldn't take care of themselves. And one day I got, there was a doctor who came on the unit who started complaining about a bad online review, the fake review that was hurting his private practice. And so I was complaining about my student loans. I was in a bad mood too. And he, you know, kind of joked around. He said, you know, well, if you can figure out how to remove this bad review, I'll pay off your student loans. I was like, well, doctor, I owe like $32,000. Like, that's a lot. He kind of rolled his eyes at me and he said, I think I probably lost $150,000 just this week Wow. Because of this bad review. I was like, what do you mean? He's like, well, I lost 15 consults. And, you know, at my private practice, we charge a little over, you know, $10,000 for surgery. So, you know, I probably seriously lost over 150K. And I was like, wow. So you're serious? Like, if I get this? He's like, oh, totally. He's like, I already hired a lawyer. They can remove it. You know, I hired other people and they couldn't deal with it. My mom worked at the hospital too. And she, you know, said that this doctor was a pretty stand-up guy. And so when I went home, I was like, okay, well, I know nothing about business. I didn't have a contract or anything, but this doctor said it, right? So I knew it would take me 2 years to make that kind of money. So I went online, I tried to remove it, got shut down. Tried it for weeks, got shut down. I ended up, you know, I had about $800 in my bank account at the time. I bought a plane ticket to San Francisco and I staked out the building where the people worked at that company.
Wow.
And I like a crazy person, I approached every single person that I could. Hey, do you work at this company? I need to get a bad review removed. What? Do you need money? No. I don't need money. I just have a doctor in Los Angeles who needs to get a bad review removed. Can you help? And for 3 days I did that until finally I met someone who was like, yeah, actually I worked at that company. I know exactly what to do. They pulled me into a nearby Starbucks. We sat down for 20 minutes and it changed my life. They showed me how to get this illegitimate fake review off. And within 48 hours, I had a check for $32,000 and a doctor who was on the board of directors who referred me to 680-ish other doctors within a month. And before I know it, I had an online reputation practice. He showed me how much I needed to charge these doctors monthly. He set me up with a CPA, and one physician network turned into multiple physician networks. And yeah, I went back to school to learn how to code.
Wow.
I figured if technology was going to replace me, I may as well build it myself, right? So I went back to school for coding and I built software that could do what I did. Software that could identify reviews that are removable, software that could look at reviews the same way I do, so that the software could focus on fulfillment while I get to focus on building my company. And that's Objection Co. That's how it got started. I went back to school again to learn machine learning and AI at MIT. And I ended up being able to figure out how to solve fake reviews. Not completely, but, you know, from a machine learning perspective, we were able to figure out how to identify fake reviews using machine learning. And now we're getting ready to go to market with another product, and we're already starting to work with the government, the Federal Trade Commission here in the United States, which is really exciting.
Amazing. Yeah. I mean, I was going to bring to you. I mean, obviously there's a lot of controversy sort of with regards to things like politics in the States, and, you know, with everything kind of being online now, you know, there's a real sense of the different parties sort of affecting you know, sort of the voters, and, you know, the whole kind of, you know, accusations of the likes of Russia and China sort of involved in, you know, affecting people and using Twitter and all these types of things like bots and, you know, and sort of reviews and posts and stuff. I mean, how have things changed in that sense, you know, from a not just from a company standpoint, but perhaps with the government? And and yeah, I mean, of course, you perhaps can't really go into depth with what maybe you're doing with the government there. But I mean, how has it sort of changed lately in terms of voting and politics? How has online sort of changed things?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, in California, we have the CCP Act, which is a Consumer Privacy Act. And then we also have Section 530, which is a federal law that protects consumer privacy, right? So it allows basically freedom of speech online without any liability on the sites that publish them. So it's really fascinating. The United States is also super business friendly, right? I mean, compared to Europe. And I'll give you an example. Just last month, France fined Google I don't know, I think it was 2 million or maybe 2.5 million euros because of some fake reviews for a single hotel, right? Mm. And the US has never fined Google for fake reviews. It'd be kind of a laughable matter here, but Europe is certainly much, you know, is really cracking down on fake reviews compared to the United States. The United States is really more laissez-faire still on fake reviews because they're really business friendly. And I hate to say it, but fake reviews are profitable. Fake reviews are good for the businesses in those marketplaces and then the marketplace itself, right? Whether it's Google or Amazon. So unless they have to change it, I mean, why break a profitable business machine? You know what I mean?
Definitely, yeah. And you know, the strange thing is when, I mean, for example, me, when I think about reviews, you know, when you think about fake reviews, you think of, you know, fake positive ones. But, you know, as you said as well, there is on the counter side of that, people putting out sort of negative, almost kind of reviews to sort of smear the competition, if you like. Is that something that you're finding a lot now in the US? I wasn't perhaps so aware of it in the UK, but I mean, undoubtedly it must play a huge part, certainly, you know, within the B2C realms, you know, when you're looking at consumer products more, you know, surely you have brands sort of attacking other brands in some way.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So just recently, because of COVID, there's a certain industries that are really getting hit hard with this. And I'll give you an example. In the wedding event planning industry or wedding venue industry specifically, what happened in certain states in California is that, like California, for example, is it went kind of abruptly into lockdown, right? And people had booked their weddings, right? People had, like, COVID happened and then it loosened up. The restrictions loosened up. You were allowed to book at venues. And all of a sudden we went back into lockdown again. The people who booked those venues, some of them, you know, signed contracts where they were non-refundable, right? Oh. They booked venues and places where, you know, you signed an agreement saying, like, no matter what, like, you know, you're going to pay this money for this, you know, have this venue. And yeah, unfortunately, some of these venues didn't provide as much of a refund as maybe they should have. But what happened is the bride, but the entire bridesmaids parties, right? The entire groom party, like all the families, you know, you'd have one customer really who's paying for this, which might be like the father of the bride or the father of the groom or the broom and the bride themselves. But like you would have one customer, but you might get like 50 or 60 bad reviews Ooh. In a single 2 or 3 day period as a result. And that's a bit unfair. You know, it's one thing to get slammed by the customer who has a first person consumer experience, you know, who exchanged money for a product or service. They're absolutely qualified to write a review because they paid for something, right? Well, even if it didn't come out to be there, they should be allowed to complain about it, but not the entire family, right? Not the entire bridal army, so to speak. So yeah, we saw thousands of reviews like that pour in over the last few months.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah, because people are obviously, you know, angry at you know, things that have happened, albeit, you know, they've signed these contracts. And yeah, I mean, it's a strange thing, really, isn't it, now? Because, you know, if you think perhaps even just sort of 15, 20, certainly 30 years ago, people never really had a power over sort of brands and even stores like shops and so forth. You know, if you buy a product and it's not satisfactory, you know, you can tweet about it, you know, you can put a review on Google, you can put a review on Amazon if you bought a product off Amazon. And, you know, it just seems that consumers have a lot of power now. And of course, you know, that certainly can be abused. So it's, you know, it's definitely an amazing time, you know, that we live in. In terms of sort of slightly digressing, in terms of, you know, sort of the internet and, you know, how things have changed lately. I mean, do you see any sort of booming new areas of the internet? Or, I mean, for example, you know, taking reviews, are people reviewing things in different ways now? Is social media, I mean, for example, because I would assume that a lot of the reviews that you work with are, you know, on Google or Amazon, but I mean, do you also look at the social media sites as well? Is are things changing in that sense? I mean, is it now everywhere, or are you having to almost police the whole, you know, web really?
Yeah, our technology certainly could be used for fake news, right? But right now it's not optimized for that. It's really narrowly optimized for review content where you have a profile that with certain behavior on it. You have review content with, you know, with actual words, and then the star rating. Right now our system needs all three in order to, you know, make predictions on how legitimate these reviews are. There's some really interesting new like buzzwords on the internet right now, like NFTs. Really is a hot topic right now. We are seeing some interesting things in the review space for NFTs, as, you know, these NFT marketplaces are trying to build credibility really quickly, and you know, sell these. I don't know how to call them, just their wares, so to speak.
Yeah, it's amazing. NFTs. I mean, I'm definitely into cryptocurrency and all the technology around that, the altcoins and Bitcoin and everything. I'm very much into sort of the future of where money is going to go. And I mean, with NFTs, it's almost something different completely, and that's kind of almost unfathomable for me. You know, it's for anybody that's listening that isn't aware of you know, what they are, it's effectively sort of digital art, isn't it? You know. It's amazing that people would pay millions, you know, for an NFT, you know, which is, you know, gives them a code and sort of says that image is theirs. But absolutely fascinating. Have you bought any NFTs? Are you in digital currency at all?
Definitely really big into digital currency, cryptocurrency. You know, I've got a few mining rigs myself. As an IT guy, but you know, I haven't bought any NFTs yet, but there are a few that I have my eyes on that I'm thinking about pulling the trigger on.
Excellent, yeah, excellent. And I mean, well, now we're on the topic of sort of digital currencies and sort of, you know, digressing a bit. I mean, what do you think is the future of you know, digital currencies and Bitcoin, for example? Because I mean, I probably joined the craze, I would say, sort of the end of last year, and I saw some nice gains on Bitcoin, and I've, you know, become aware of altcoins and things like that. But I guess a lot of the world kind of sees it as being very volatile. I mean, it is. I mean, if you look today, you know, the alts were up a lot yesterday, and now they're down, you know, sort of 10, you know, percent, you know, around that. I mean, how do you see it changing? And also, being in technology as you are, the likes of you know, like MicroStrategy and so forth, a lot of these tech companies putting their you know, their capital, their sort of reserves into the likes of Bitcoin. What do you think, as someone in sort of technology, do you see that as the future, or how do you see digital currency sort of playing into the future?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we accept Bitcoin and Ethereum as a form of payment, so we're happy to accept it ourselves. We've only had you know, a handful of people actually do it, and for people who are into cryptocurrency, they love to use it, right? So for most people, it's just a credit card, and we're happy with that too. You know, I do see crypto moving forward in the future as decentralization continues to occur. And I think we're going to just continue to see, you know, decentralized banking, as well as, you know, more decentralized financing from our world banks. It'll be interesting to see how the technology and how the blockchain evolves as these other pioneering altcoins continue to provide functionalities into some of the more major coins, you know, into the more major tokens. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, it is going to be around in the future. I don't think, you know, Bitcoin's going to crash to zero or anything. You know, I feel like it's really a great way to, for larger institutions, you know, to hedge and personally, you know, to have, you know, to invest some assets into, yeah, it's a great way to diversify stuff too. So I'm a huge fan of crypto. I'm not all in like some of the fanatics, but I certainly have a good chunk in there.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, no, that's great. And in terms of being an entrepreneur, your sort of, you know, your whole experience and story, starting a company, finding your kind of way, to any sort of budding entrepreneurs out there, people who perhaps, like you said, you know, are in a job that they feel, you know, is this right for me? Is this not right for me? You know, perhaps they've got, like you say, sort of, you know, bills they've got to pay, you know, they've got, student debt and so forth. But they kind of want to follow their dreams. They want to start in business. What are your if you could give five tips, what would you say would be your best bits of advice in terms of getting started and being an entrepreneur?
You know, the first piece of advice would be to solve a problem, right? I mean, at the end of the day, there's a million problems you could solve for businesses or for other people. You know, people but go to restaurants because they're hungry. Like, restaurants solve the problem of hunger. So just to give a really super basic example, but you got to figure out what problem you want to solve for people and then actually do it. In the beginning, you don't have a brand, you don't have like a business reputation, it's just you. So you got to figure out, you know, how to get your first few customers. And you need to do a really good job initially, making sure you fulfill with your customers, because those are your case studies. That's what you can showcase as you start to scale up more and more. You need to be able to showcase your work. You need to be able to show results and show value, right? So, my first piece of advice would definitely be to figure out what problem you want to solve. Figure out, you know, how much you want to get paid for it. Figure, you know, make sure you're showcasing your results. And then, getting mentorship. You know, there's so many young business owners who, you know, aren't getting the mentorship that they could, just because they don't know it's available. There are so many online support groups for startup entrepreneurs, for startup business owners, where they can get access to resources, templates, guidelines, best practices. You know, so much of this stuff that's just free and available. You just have to ask for it. You know, I'd certainly recommend getting out there and looking at, you know, what some of these startup groups have to offer.
Brilliant. Great answers. And talking more about your company now, something that I'm really interested in, because I'm sort of a sales and marketing expert here in the UK, is of course just that, you know, marketing and sales. And so I'd like to, if I may, of course, if it's not kind of going to give too much away to the competition, if you you know, have competition in terms of your marketplace, but what is your sort of marketing strategy, your sales strategy? Are you all digital? Do you do much sort of phone sales? I mean, what sort of strategy do you have? And of course, a lot of people these days, they have these big sales funnels, digital sales funnels with webinars and stuff. What's your strategy, if you're happy to share that?
No, I'm happy to share it. I hope we get more competition, because I think competition really builds like our marketplace, right? It helps businesses evolve and become better. But what we do is we monitor about 80 million listings every single day. And we look for businesses who recently got an illegitimate bad review written for their company. Because we monitor so many businesses, we get a lead list every day of about 10,000 businesses, and then we filter them based on how likely the review can be removed. That way, when we go out of our way and invest our time and energy into our outreach, we know if we promise them results, they can get results. So in that list of 10,000 kind of shrinks down to like 2,500 businesses a day. And we have a small sales team. We call each and every single one of them. We cold call them and we offer them a free tutorial on how to remove the review themselves. We get their email address and then we nurture them. We nurture them with content. We nurture them with testimonials and with free tutorials on how to do stuff. We provide value without asking for anything in return other than their contact information. Once our CRM starts to see buying intent signals, like what we've kind of defined as buying intent, then we follow up with them to schedule a demo, a software demo, and then we try and close them on the software demo into a free trial, where we have a really great conversion from free trial to paid users. So yeah, for us, it starts up by identifying our audience, you know, doing some really good prospecting and then getting them into our top of funnel and then moving them through our bottom of the funnel based off of buying intent and proper follow-up.
Brilliant. Yeah. I mean, I really like that as a salesperson. I think that's, you know, a really good strategy, you know, sort of like you say, adding value, you know, sort of providing value to the customer before they, you know, before they, you know, buy, you know, they're sort of being nurtured with all the information. And it's interesting, like you say, kind of putting it out there that they could potentially do it themselves. But, you know, a lot of the time when people see how difficult or, you know, how sort of technical perhaps it is or you know, how time consuming it is, they think, oh, you know, is there a done for you service aspect, you know, of your business? And they tend to opt for that. And that's really interesting. So another question I'd love to ask you, I think we've got a little bit of time left in the window of time, but I'd love to touch on this, and it's artificial intelligence, as you mentioned at the very beginning. A lot of people, and I've asked this on one of my previous podcasts, are quite scared about artificial intelligence, AI, and what it means in the future. A lot of people are scared about, you know, perhaps AI taking jobs and, you know, and even things like, you know, driverless cars and, you know, all these new concepts, which to me are very exciting and very different. But of course, there's a lot of dilemmas in there, you know, moral dilemmas. In fact, I went to a talk a while back and they were talking about sort of the moral dilemma that if you're in a driverless car and, you know, there's a split second decision for a computer to decide whether they opt to save the driver or the pedestrian, you know, what moral decision does that computer take? So there's a lot of things like that. So I'll throw that open to a big topic there. But what are your thoughts and why should people perhaps not be so scared about it? And how do you think the future is going to change to kind of encompass everybody now? And yeah,
I mean, it's true. AI is going to replace a lot of jobs, and we're already seeing it, right, in Amazon warehouses and, you know, in the logistics, really. Pretty soon we're going to have driverless trucks, you know, out on the road doing long hauls and in their electric trucks. You know, I think it's, you know, at the end of the day, you have to realize, you have to ask yourself, is what you do now, could a machine do it, right? And if the answer is yes, you should be prepared. I did it myself. Like, I asked myself, could I be as a reputation consultant, which is one out of a billion jobs on this planet, right? As a reputation consultant, could I be replaced by AI? And the answer was yes. So I replaced myself with AI. But, you know, for those that aren't going into coding, for those that aren't going to change career paths, they just need to be prepared for what's coming ahead, because AI is going to start replacing their jobs. I don't think there's going to be a deficit in the job market. I think the job market's just going to become more technical. Like, for example, our AI has allowed us to hire at least 12 more people because of what the AI can do for our customers, right? So the AI actually built jobs. Now, I don't know how many jobs we we may have, you know, taken away from other people out there. It's really hard to measure. But, you know, like, yeah, for anyone in logistics, you know, for taxis, you know, for driving, you know, I think in the food industries, you know, for even line chefs, in the next 15 years, we're going to see a huge exodus of jobs and being replaced by machines. So I think people just need to be conscious of it and be aware of it and start to plan for it, because it is going to happen. And if a business can save money and still provide a good experience by, you know, replacing a human with a robot, they will, because they're in business to make money. That's most mindsets of business owners. So yeah, that's my two cents.
Brilliant. No, that's great. Yeah, no, definitely. I think, you know, things are definitely going to change. But I think, you know, with education and people getting into these new sectors, you know, there's always going to be jobs, you know. Yeah. Even if I think in the very, very distant future, I mean, I've got this this, you know, thought in my mind that people will be consumers, you know, and they'll be, you know, paid in terms of credits, you know, to watch TV and stuff. I mean, that kind of thing is kind of already happening, but, you know, in sort of a mass way, I would say. So that's my sort of crazy thought of the future. The last two questions, really just to kind of end. The first would be, do you have any great book suggestions that you'd like to kind of share with people? A book that's, you know, inspired you, and that they might be able to learn from?
Sure. I've got a lot of great books. I mean, depending on what your goals are, right? But one of my favorite books is Creativity Inc. by Ed Catmull. And it's about, you know, it's about the common denominators of really creative people, and then how to extract, you know, the inner creativity within yourself and implement it. So wonderful book. I think that has really helped change my life as well.
Amazing, fantastic. And I'd kick myself if I didn't ask you this, and it's a very British question to finish with, but being there in Los Angeles, I've been to Los Angeles once or twice, but what's it like living in Los Angeles? Obviously a very celebrity orientated place. Have you have you had coffee with any celebrities locally? Have you seen any shopping lately?
I mean, I live down the street from, you know, Wayne Gretzky and Tiger Woods. So, but outside of that, I mean, it's LA. You see celebrities all the time. It's kind of just a normal thing. I haven't had coffee with any like A-list celebrities. It's, I don't know. Growing up here and living here, you know, you're not like as starstruck. It's a nice place. I mean, we have really beautiful beaches here where you can go surfing in the morning, and then if you want to go snowboarding in the afternoon, and then, you know, skydiving for lunch, it's doable in LA.
Wow. Fantastic. For anybody that wants to kind of check out the business and perhaps they're interested in getting some bad, you know, fake reviews removed, how can people reach out to you? What are your social media profiles? What's the website?
Yeah, you can reach out to me on LinkedIn, Curtis Boyd, Objection Co. You're welcome to come to our website, objection.co. We've got a chat tool where you can just pop in and say hi and talk to us about whatever's going on. We'd be happy to chat with you based on any online review issues you may be having.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for your time today, Curtis. I've really, really enjoyed it. Finding out about your story and, you know, sort of how, you know, reputation is really important today in business, certainly with the amount of reviews and the amount of, you know, business and purchases online now. So thank you very much for that. And thank you for being a guest on the podcast. Thank you very much. Anybody that's interested, you know, obviously check out the website and do get in touch. That's all for this week. But thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me.